Chaitadharma Samarani Devi, August 25th, Govardhan.
Gurave Guru Chandraya Radhikayai Tvadalaye Krishnaya Krishna Bhaktaya Tadabhaktaya Namo Namo Yam Pravrajantam Anupetam Apeta Krityam Dvaipayano Viraka Diksha Gurudev, Nityalila Pravishta Om Vishnupad, Astosita Satashri Srimad, Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupad, and the same unlimited obeisances in the dust of the lotus feet of my most worshipable Diksha Gurudev, Om Vishnupad, Astosita Satashri Srimad, Srila Bhaktivedanta Narayan Goswami Maharaj. To all of our disciplic succession and all the assembled devotees. As you remember from yesterday, we were in the midst of the wonderful chapter 11 of Sri Jiva Dharma, which is called Nitya Dharma and Idolatry. You may remember that all the Vaishnavas from the various islands of Navadvipa were invited to a big festival arranged by a rich merchant of Chinadanga. And they were all there doing japa, doing kirtan, experiencing the astasattvika bhavs, effulgent with tilak, neck beads, and the stamp of Gaur-Nityananda's names on the limbs of their body. Then there was a loud recitation of Chaitanya Mangal, and that brought them even more ecstasy. And somehow or other, right in the middle of that hearing, the doorkeeper entered and told everybody, told the authorities, who told the advanced devotees there, that the mullah, or the best of the Muslim scholars, was outside the door in the courtyard wanting to ask a few questions to the Vaishnavas. They were not inimical to Vaishnavism or belligerent or to any other religion, but this mullah was only devoted to his own religion. So four Vaishnavas were selected from four different areas where of Navadvipa. They were inspired to speak with him, and among them, they decided that, Pandit Gaurachandra of Mayapur would be the spokesman who would represent them. So very humbly, as Vaishnavas are very humble, they offered obeisances to all the Muslims, about 50 Muslims, with big long white beards and their gorgeously decorated stallions just behind them. many other Hindus, curious, and other people were also sitting around, and it was a very beautiful assembly. And the mullah asked, why do you Vaishnavas worship idols? Because your Chaitanya Dev, who came maybe 100 years ago, he corrected the faults in Hindu Dharma, wherein the Hindus were worshipping many demigods. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu corrected that. So how come you people still worship idols? So as the conversation continued, they're discussing how the deity is not made of, really not made of any material elements, although he appears to be. The deity is made of Chinmoy, and according to the, that is transcendental, Sachidananda, and according to the adhikar, or eligibility, of the worshipper, he's seen differently. He's seen by the Uttama Adhikari as completely spiritual, and when they see the deity, they don't see any stiff deity not standing, just standing, but they see the Lord's pastimes. Gurudev once said to my sannyasi god brothers, who he used to teach, have you seen the three presiding deities of Vrindavan, Madan Mohan, Govinda, and Gopinath? And they said, oh yes, yes, Maharaj, we've seen them. And Gurudev said, I have not. So the Uttama Adhikari sees them that way. The Madhyama Adhikari, still with his senses, may see stone or wood, but by his intelligence, he perceives that they perceive, and that they are aware when he offers prayers, when he's thinking about them. He knows that they accept his offerings of worship, of bhoga, and so many things. The Kanista Adhikari, he sees the deity as jada, or inert matter. He wants to believe that the deity is Chinmoy, although because of his level of faith, his very small sukritis and sanskars in the direction of bhakti, he can't. And therefore, he doesn't know how to please the deity by serving Vaishnavas. So Pandit Gaurachandra is explaining to the mullah and all others that for neophytes, deity worship is essential. For the advanced devotee, it's auspicious. And deity worship is the foundation of all religions and all humanity. Because the world is full of neophytes, or people with very, very slim, if any, inclination towards spiritual life. Without any religion that does not have deity worship in the center, and that deity worship under the guidance of the pure devotee, people will be grossly materialistic and oblivious to the Lord. Whereas by deity worship, they gradually become purified to see the Lord's Chinmaya body. And the mullah would ask such questions as, well, it's the work of Satan. According to our scriptures, it's the work of Satan to worship God in material form. It's better to think of him in the mind. We also accept, as you've described, that Allah is actually Bhagavan, and he has form, and he has full of six characteristics. But if you conjure up a form for your vision, that must be imagination, and it's the work of Satan. And that's very sinful and very offensive. So Gaurachandra Das Babaji replied that we don't believe that such a monstrous person like Satan exists, and if he did, he would just be some powerful jiva who is subordinate to God. God is one without a second. He has no equal and no greater. He doesn't have any competitor. There's no one besides him. He's everything, and everything is in relation to him. Everyone and everything is subordinate to him. So nothing and no one can act outside of his will. So because the whole world thinks materially, regarding your question, because the whole world thinks materially, you Muslims, you make a form in your mind. Your mind is full of matter. It only knows matter. It only sees matter. So even if you think, oh, I am meditating on Brahma, what are you meditating on? Brahma is beyond time and space and unlimited, but you're limited within time. You can only think of him within time. In a moment, your meditation is gone. As regarding the space, the only unlimited thing you can think of is the sky, and then you're going to think of the clouds, and then you're going to think of the sun, and then you're going to think that it's raining. So there's no question of actually thinking of Nirakar Brahma, which is only the bodily effulgence of Bhagavan anyway. So then, at the end of the class yesterday, we were coming to Mula's question that, well, at least, okay, even if I accept that, let's say I accept that you could worship the form of the Lord as the deity, but what about worshiping just cats and dogs? I know that people worship cats and dogs also. So, Gaurachandra explained that different people have different degrees of connection with the Lord. Those who are not Vaishnavas, who have no connection with Vaishnavas, when they start believing that a God does exist, they start being grateful that he's existing, that everything is a product of him, and that all great things are manifestations of him. They don't know what he is or who he is, but in gratitude they start bowing down to a mountain or a river, any some great extraordinary creation of the Lord. And this at least is the beginning. We Vaishnavas don't condemn anybody. We don't follow everybody, we just follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But we don't condemn anybody, whereas I see that you're condemning. And if you're condemning, you can't make any advancement. But anyway, besides that, you Muslims, you're actually worshipping cats and dogs yourself and meditating on cats and dogs, because even if you try to think within your mind that the Lord is formless, you only know matter, so you'll end up worshipping all kinds of material things. And plus, your mind is full of thoughts of cats and dogs and all kinds of dirty things, sinful activities. So now we're coming to the end of their conversation. Oh, and then also Gaurachandra said, it's not Satan who's the source of sin. The source of sin is avidya, and avidya means forgetfulness of Krishna. Krishna buli se jeev anari bahimuk atoiva maya tare deha samsarari duk. Because a living entity has forgotten Krishna, therefore maya has grabbed him and is giving him various miseries. It's the only source of all of our miseries is forgetfulness of Krishna. From forgetfulness of Krishna, which is ignorance, we commit sinful activities, and from sinful activities we suffer. So now, what we're up to today, in this chapter 11. The Mula asks, the inclination to worship God will not come just by worshiping the deity, because the mind which worships the deity is full of matter. So Gaurachandra replied, your theory is quite wrong, because in Shastra there's so much history showing how so many millions of people became great devotees and have reached the level of praying by deity worship. The root of all auspiciousness, and from where we learn about the deities, is sadhu sangha. Sadhu sangha is the root of auspiciousness and the root of bhakti. As we discussed yesterday, Gaurachandra is explaining that where does the deity in this world, how does the deity in this world become manifested? First, the deity manifests in the natural Sahaj Samadhi, trance of the pure devotees. According to their Swarup, they have a loving relationship with a particular form of Lord. And that deity manifests in their heart, and from their heart, the form of the Lord manifests in this world. So Sadhu Sangha is the root of all auspiciousness, of all bhakti. He said, but the non-Aryans, Gaurachandra is explaining, the non-Aryans or non-Vaishnavas who say, no, don't worship the deity. Whereas in the scriptures there's so much history of how people who worship the deity became advanced. There's no history in any scripture where those who say don't worship the deity have made any advancement. Rather, they just waste time in useless and malicious arguments. Then the Mullah said, okay, I accept the worship of the deity, as you've explained it. But, as I mentioned earlier, not worship of a dog or a serpent or a debauchee, a prostitute. Our revered prophet, Pargambara Sahib, he condemns material worship. And that's when Gaurachandra explained about the gratitude and how this gratitude of offering respects to rivers and mountains gives them some sukriti, so in some life in the future they can come into contact with the devotee. And we'll see in this next chapter, chapter 12, how very interesting story about how somebody's sukriti made them a pure devotee. In a very unusual way, how they picked up sukriti. But the worship of the formless, like you Muslims do, and you do namaz. They have this cloth, and then they sit in the Vajrasana pose on the cloth, and they do what they call namaz. This is also because it's devoid of love. You can't love a formless void. This is compared with worshipping dogs and cats, because it's devoid of love. Plus, if you ridicule or condemn others, your door to bhakti is totally shut. Then the Mullah said, so are you saying that God is everything and everything is God? So even if you worship a sinful thing, that's also God? No, no, Gaurachandra said. God creates and controls, and everybody and everything has a relationship with Him. We Vaishnavas study from the scriptures how everything is God, or how God is in all things. You should think about these things seriously, but we Vaishnavas are not at all inclined towards matter, and we're not at all inclined towards argument. So please permit us to go now, because we have to continue our hearing of Chaitanya Mangal. Then the Mullah said, yes, we must also go. And they all got on their 50 beautiful stallions and rode off. Then Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur closes this chapter by saying that it's not the result of this conversation is not known, whether the Mullah and his followers, how they actually responded to the conversation. But the Mullah did say, I'm very pleased to hear your view, and on another day I'll come and ask you more questions. Then the Vaishnavas went off in great delight, chanting and hearing Chaitanya Mangal. Now we come to chapter 12, which is the beginning of our getting to know another future great personality, who in the beginning of the chapter is not exactly a great personality, but who will be. As usual, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur
opens us up to beautiful transcendental geography. This chapter is called Nitya Dharma, Sadhan and Sadhya. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, Navadvip is the supreme holy place in the whole world. It's non-different from Vrindavan, and it has a 32 square mile area. It's the shape of an 8-petaled lotus flower, and the center of that lotus flower is Antardweep, and the core of that center is Mayapur. North of Mayapur is Simantadweep, where there's a temple of Sri Samantini Devi, or Parvati, who met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu there, and the earth that where she met him, she put on her forehead as a what do you call that?
The bindi, sindur.
Or simanto, on the part of the hair. Then, north of that temple is Vilva Paksharini, and south is Brahma Paksharini. In the northern section of Navadvip is a place called Simalia. And during Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time, many pundits used to live there. Who else used to live there? His own, Mahaprabhu's own maternal grandfather, Nilambara Chakravarti, also lived there. And very close to Nilambara Chakravarti's house, which still existed 100 years later, was the house of Brajanath Nyaya Panchanana. Brajanath Nyaya Panchanana. He was very young, in his early 20s, and still he was the greatest scholar of Nyaya Shastra, that is, the Shastra of logic and argument and the study of the nature of objects, their relation to other objects, their distinction from other objects, the nature of time. And seeing everything through logic. Everybody, all the scholars at that time, were scared of him, because he used to defeat everybody by his astonishing and unprecedented arguments. He had one rival who was a very cruel-hearted Nyayawala, and his name was Nyayika Chudamani. And this Nyayika Chudamani was devastated in one debate by the sharp words of Brajanath. And he decided to take revenge and kill him by tantra, by incantations of death mantras. So he left his home and he moved to a crematorium. And there in the crematorium was in Rudradweep, which is the island of Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva was the author of this tantra. And he began chanting death mantras day and night. Then, on the new moon night, midnight, in the middle of the new moon night, he started calling out in great distress to Durga, to Kali. O Mother Kali, O Durga, you are the only worshipable deity in this Kali Yuga. I understand that you're pleased simply by the recitation of mantras. I know that I have so many faults, but I'm begging you to excuse my faults and please appear before me. He was in great distress, offering oblations into the fire and chanting these death mantras in the name of Brajanath Nyaya Panchanana. Even though everything he did was like based on complete revengeful false ego, still the power of that mantra was so great, astonishing, that all of a sudden there were dense, dark clouds in the sky, and deafening thunder, and in the intermittent flashes of lightning, one could see ghosts and evil spirits lurking. And taking the help of his sacrificial wine, he called out, "Oh Mother, don't delay even for a moment." Then all of a sudden, from the heavens, there was an aerial voice which said, "Don't worry, be peaceful. Vrajanath Nyaya Panchanana will debate no longer. In a few days, he will become silent. He will no longer be your rival. He will no longer speak on Nyaya. So be peaceful and go home." So he was so happy. Nyayika Chudamani was so happy. He offered his pranams to Lord Shiva, Mahadev, and happily went home. Now back to Brajanath. No, he didn't die. He was such a great scholar. He was always reading day and night the books on logic. And there was one book by one commentator, one Nyaya commentator, named Kanai Bhatta Siramani. And he disagreed with his commentary on somebody else's book on Nyaya. And then he wrote his own book, his own commentary. While he was dreaming, while he was awake, while he was walking, sitting, eating, sounds like Kamsa, doesn't it? At every moment, he was meditating on the logic of Nyaya Shastra. What is the nature of objects, aqueous, terrestrial, the nature of time? His only desire was to defeat others in argument. He didn't want a big house or money or anything like that. Beautiful family. Just wanted to defeat others in logic. He wanted to become the greatest Nyaya scholar. And actually he was. In all the islands of Navadvipa, all the other scholars were afraid to come out of their house that they might meet him and be defeated. So now we can understand by all these chapters, the previous chapter and this chapter, what Navadvipa was filled with before Mahaprabhu's advent, during, and now after his disappearance. The place was filled with smarta brahmanas, Durga worshippers, tantrics, Mayavadis, and he was one of them. He was a Nyayavadi. The word transcendence never so much as entered his ear. Then one day he was sitting on the Ganges, on the bank of the Ganges, and meditating on all the aspects of Nyaya, and all of a sudden, one new student of Nyaya Shastra approached him and he said, "Oh sir, have you heard of Nimai Pandit's logical arguments and how he defeated the atomic theory of creation? You should hear his logical arguments, just once at least." "Oh, who is Nimai Pandit? Is he the son of Jagannath Mishra? Tell me about his logical arguments." "Well, he defeated Kanai Bhatta, and he's embarrassed, that is. He embarrassed Kanai Bhatta, Siramani, and he's defeated everyone. He's known as the greatest logician. Not only as the greatest logician, everybody worships him as Kaur Hari, as Purna Brahma himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even though in his time he was the greatest of all Nyaya logicians, he considered Nyaya as insignificant. Not only did he consider Nyaya as insignificant, but he considered the whole world as insignificant. And he took up the life of a mendicant and began leading the Sankirtan movement and Hari Nam and giving everybody in Navadvip love of God, praying. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that the tendency, a human tendency, human nature, is to revere someone who's expert in what you're studying. So immediately he got some faith in, now here's where his Sukriti is starting. Immediately he got so much faith in Nimai Pandit, and he wanted to, with great difficulty, he searched out people who were familiar with his logical arguments. Then he became more attached to him. And then he even started praying to him. And he said, he started calling out his name, O Nimai Pandit, O Gaurahari, and he kept chanting his name all the time. Then it became more and more. And he became completely filled with thoughts of Nimai, the logician. And he started praying to him, O Nimai Pandit, if I only lived during your time, if I only had the fortune to be born during your time, then oh, what I could have learned from you. Please, come in my heart, manifest in my heart just once, so that I can become a great logician like you. So by his absorption, he got more and more purified, and desiring to attain one of Nimai Pandit's books, he thought, well, those who worship Gaurahari and Nimai Pandit, and who are chanting Harinam, they must have some of his books on logic and his logical arguments. So he began to search out the association of devotees. So by all these things, now his infatuation with Nimai Pandit, just by his absorption in it, in him, now he forgot Nimai Pandit, the logician, and he became totally infatuated, enamored, and saturated with Nimai Pandit, the devotee, Gaurahari, the devotee. First he was thinking, just in terms of logic, and he was thinking, yes, he must be Purna Brahma. He must be the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, and here I was the Supreme Lord, otherwise how could such great logical arguments have come from his mind? Plus, he must be Gaurahari, because Gaur means brilliant and golden, and Hari means he took away. He took away the darkness of ignorance, of defeatable arguments, and he defeated everybody. And he's of golden color, so he must be Gaurahari. And the Gaur is also the brilliance of his own logical arguments. But later on, just because of his absorption in Nimai Pandit, he forgot Nimai Pandit, the logician, and he himself stopped reading Nyaya Shastra. And he started just to become interested in Harinam and Vaishnavism. And then he began to think. Just see how the thinking becomes transformed just by absorption in the pure thing, and even unknown Sukritis, unknowingly performing Sukritis. Then he started thinking, well, if Nimai Pandit was the greatest Nyaya scholar of his time, and he gave it up to become a Vaishnava, well, maybe I should do that too. So then he started looking for who is the Vaishnava that he could take shelter of. And he found one great Vaishnava who melted his heart. And that great Vaishnava was Raghunath Das Babaji. Raghunath Das Babaji was one of the greatest Vaishnavas in Navadvip, always absorbed in praying, in talking about Mahaprabhu's Leela, and in doing Harinam. And he also met with our hero, Paramahamsa Prem Das Babaji, many times, and they would often have beautiful discussions on praying. So Brajanath approached him, fell at his feet, and he begged him to ask some questions. The questions he asked were in relation to sadhan and sadhya. And tomorrow we will find out what are those questions and what are the answers. Now, I promised you for the last 2 days that we would discuss more elaborately how to learn verses. So I picked a verse from Prahlad Charitra, and we'll go over how to learn this verse as a sample. Prahlad Maharaj is speaking to his father. Tat sadu manye soravajadeninam sada samudvignadiyam asatgraha etvatmapartam krihamandakupam vanam gatoyad dharmashrayita. First, I want to know, no, we won't do that verse. That verse I have the word for word. But I don't have the translation here. I'd like to have one with the translation, so we'll do another one. Here? Okay. We will do this first, because Charachandika kindly has the translation. So there, Prahlad Maharaj is telling his father, when his father asked him, "Oh Prahlad, what is the very best thing that you learned in school today?" Prahlad replied, Prahlad Maharaj replied, "O best of the Asuras, king of the demons, as far as I have learned from my spiritual master, any person who has accepted a temporary body is certainly embarrassed by anxiety because of having fallen in the dark well of family life, or in other words, the bodily concept of life. Where there is no water, rust, but only suffering, one should give up this position and go to the forest. That is, he should accept sadhusanga. Anywhere the sadhu is, that's where the forest of Vrindavan is. More specifically, one should go to Vrindavan by the mercy of sadhu, where pure spontaneous bhakti prevails, and thus take shelter of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna." So, in order that the syllables of the mantra won't be just a string of shapes and sounds, and I have to remember 1,000 shapes, which is very difficult and dry, I should know the translation. So for the translation, I will repeat over and over again. While I'm sitting in one place and studying, I might study with another devotee and we'll repeat it together, or I might be engaged in some activity. Suppose I'm cleaning my room. I'll put the book down, the seventh canto, or my notes on this verse 755 of Prahlad Charitra. I'll put the book down or my notes down on a table, and then I'll come and go from that table. And I'll say one expression, one phrase at a time. Prahlad replied, "O best of the Asuras, king of demons, as far as I learned from my spiritual master." Okay, so this leaves us in suspense. because it doesn't tell you what he learned. So I'm going to say that over and over again. Prahlad replied, O best of the demons, as far as I have learned from my spiritual masters, Prahlad replied, O best of the demon, as far as I've learned from my spiritual masters, Prahlad replied, O best of the demons, as far as I've learned from my spiritual masters. Okay, now I've got it. Now I can go on to the next part. Any person who has accepted a temporary body is certainly embarrassed by anxiety. Any person who has accepted a material body is certainly embarrassed by anxiety. And even if I say it in a little bit different words, it doesn't really matter. If you look in Srila Prabhupada's folio, you see that there's slight variations in the ways that he translates. Any person who has accepted a material body is certainly embarrassed by various anxieties. Anybody who has accepted a material body is certainly embarrassed by various anxieties. Anybody who has accepted a material body is certainly embarrassed by various anxieties. Then I go back, and meanwhile I'm leaving my book and going and cleaning the wall, cleaning my table, washing my dishes. As a matter of fact, I heard that Sripad Tirtha Maharaj was ordered by Srila Gurudev to learn all the Vedas, everything in all the Vedas, when he was newly came to Gurudev. He learned a lot of verses in the kitchen while cooking. So Sri Prahlad Maharaj replied, O best of the demons, as far as I've learned from my spiritual master, anyone who's accepted a material body will certainly be embarrassed by varieties of anxiety. So then this way we can go on. Then I should also learn the word-for-word meanings. Sri Prahlad Uvacha, Sri Prahlad Maharaj replied, Tat, that, sadhu, tat sadhu manye, sadhu means very good, or the best part of life. Manye, tat sadhu manye, I think that the best part of life. So now I'm kind of repeating phrases of what I learned in the English. And then I'm repeating each word, then I look away, tut, tut means that, sadhu means very good, and manye, it means I think. So in this way, repeating and repeating and repeating, and then telling five people in the day. And even if we mess it up, I remember that when I was learning Vayam Dvitiya Vinivesitasyat, Srila Gurudev had spoken on this verse 2 or 3 days in a row in Australia. And so I was determined to learn the verse. So then, as you know, during Gurudev's Harikatha festival, other devotees, or quasi-devotees, or false devotees like myself, take turns to give class. And so I started practicing that verse in my class. And I was messing it up, and people in the audience were helping. But by the third class, because I was determined, by the third class I got it right, and then I kept saying it once I got it right in all the classes that I was giving, just a little drop here and there. And now I can say it in my sleep, and I might wake up saying it. Because Srila Prabhupada used to quote that this body is so made that anything you practice, it becomes easy. And I think many of you out there in Phoneland have been devotees for many years. And still, before we were devotees, when we used to watch TV, and we used to watch the TV commercials, and there was the same jingle every 15 minutes as a commercial. And I haven't watched a TV show in 40 years. But still, because I watched those jingles year after year after year, I could call at will any of those commercials or the nursery rhymes, Mary Had a Little Lamb, that I learned in school. which I haven't sung for 50 years. So by steady repetition, the thing becomes natural. Srila Gurudev gave me the example of sanskars. What is a sanskar? It's a repeated activity that you repeat so much that it makes an impression on the heart. Like suppose you take a rock and a rope, and you make that rope go back and forth on the rock. Obviously nothing is going to happen. But if you keep doing it again and again and again, as Gurudev says in his Hindi classes, karte, 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 keep doing, then that rope starts making an impression on the rock. Or if you keep dropping waters, you know, every drop of water withers away the stone, first nothing happens. But if you keep doing millions of drops, then it starts actually making an impression on the stone. So any person can change to anything else by impressions. So that's a little tip on learning verses. And whatever you've read, or if you're learning a verse and somebody's passing by, call them over and say, excuse me, so-and-so, Prabhu, so-and-so, Didi, or Mommy, or whoever the person is. Can I tell you something? I have to tell you something really important. You know what? And they say, what? And then you tell them your verse. And they become mesmerized. And they say, okay, thanks. Or if you mess it up, if you mess it up, it doesn't matter because you've gotten that much and you know what you still have to learn. And they're happy to have gotten at least part of the verse. Also, when you're chanting Hare Krishna, you can learn new verses. If you say, I don't have time to learn a verse, not every verse, but many verses you can learn while chanting your rounds, the kind of verses that are prayers. Because learning means remembering. Remembering means meditating. So if I'm meditating on a prayer, suppose I'm learning the verse, Nama Shresta Manamapi, Sachi Kutra Matra Sarupam, Rupam Kasyagajam Urupuri Matari Ghostavati, Radha Kundam Girivana Maho Radhika Madhavasam, Rakto Yasha Pratita Pratoya Sri Guram. I'm learning the verse about Sri Guru. I'm so grateful to my Gurudev because he's given me the service of Sachinandan Gaurhari and his associates, and he's given me Naam, he's given me Gayatri Mantra. But as Gurudev said, when I say that prayer, I feel a pinching because I haven't really received that yet from my Gurudev. He's trying to give it, but I haven't received it. So then I put a P.S. Oh Gurudev, I put a P.S. to Raghunath Das Goswami's prayer, and I say, please make me like this. Make Raghunath Das Goswami make this prayer my prayer too. So as you're trying to remember that prayer and you're chanting your rounds, that's the thing we're supposed to be thinking about anyway. So that's the end of the class today. And I'll ask if there's any questions or comments. Today there's time for questions and comments because it's 5 minutes to the hour. So please unmute your phone. Yes? Or if there's any questions from the devotees sitting here. Yes, this is Pankaj Prabhu. Dhanyavad Pranam. Oh, by the way, I got an answer from Gurudev yesterday. Because as I mentioned, from 6 to 7, he comes out and chants japa. And we all chant japa with him on the other side of the garden. And so when he's going back to his room, we have an opportunity to offer obeisances and say something quick. So regarding Anjali's question, does one have a better bhav to worship the deity that's installed? Of course, for a transcendental person, it doesn't make any difference. But I said, I asked Gurudev, will one make more advancement if the deity has pran pratishtha And Gurudev said, yes. And I said, why is that? And Gurudev said, it is the will of Krishna. And Krishna made that arrangement. Because, as mentioned yesterday, one has an increased sense of responsibility. And that also an increased advancement. So what is your question, Pankaj Prabhu? Wait, it's hard to understand you. There's a lot of static in the phone. Yeah. Yeah, now I can hear you better. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Wow. I'm going to share that with the devotees here in the room. Regarding tantric and Sukritis, Pankaj Prabhu just shared something that many years ago when he was in ISKCON, one tantric used to come to the temple to make disciples for himself, to take them away from devotion. And he was very black due to being burnt from all of his incantations and tantras and maybe sacrificial fires or whatever. He was all burnt and he used to start coming to Mangal Artik and dancing around and pretending he was a great devotee to attract the attention of the devotees. And gradually, because he was coming so much, his body started changing and became not black. And gradually he left his tantra and became a devotee from the Sukritis. Thank you. Uh-huh. Good. Any other questions or comments? Thank you. Okay, no questions, so we'll end here. And Krishna Prabhu, you have some announcement? Or the next class starts on the 28th. Actually, Vasanti wants to say something. She just came and she wants to talk to you.
Hi, Krishna.
Okay. Yeah.
Hello.
I should go, but you're yesterday.